And our next panelist is Lauren Bond.
Starting time.
Thank you, committee. My name is Lauren. I lived West Side Midtown 14 years in the 4th District. February 2020, 9 5G cell towers activated in the rooftop, 325 West 37, 40 and 90 feet from my window. I had a safe place to live before the cell towers. Immediate with operation, severe symptoms were confirmed with my doctor. Constant tinnitus, burning skin, shortness of breath, palpitations, increased pain in the eyes, limiting visual function, insomnia, several migraines, and vertical disturbances through cranium, occipital region, simultaneous horizontal intracranial disturbances, extending through ear canal, and stabbing pains extending into all four extremities. Stepping into the apartment, burning sharp needles, strong pressure on the heart, difficult concentration ensues. Stepping out into the hall, it stops. I wake up in the night because I can't breathe. A rhythmic sensation pressing heavily up and down on my heart. A searing sharp energy plunges from the top of my head, traveling through my nervous system and my full body. I'm paralyzed. I want to move and can't. This goes on for half an hour, two different nights. I have severe damage to my central nervous system. It's pandemic lockdown, and I have no safe place to live. In 2 weeks, with the initial currents, I secure temporary housing with a friend. My sleep is restored. The injuries remain. I'm physically weaker, collapsing every day, feeling sliced and burned neurologically, nausea and migraines, easily triggered, and constant painful sensitivity to light. Now I move to the East Side District 6, and there's cell towers everywhere I have to avoid. I know two buildings of residents living in agony, unable to lead normal lives. The Pentagon developed weaponry with 5G, immobilizing people. I was immobilized. Now you know what can happen, and cell towers
should be... Time expired.
You can continue your testimony, Ms. Bond.
Thank you. I wanted to highly encourage using wired broadband because it is safe, reliable, efficient, and cheaper. And it's already been paid for, the copper wiring. And this could be reaching everyone because it's already paid for and the circuitry is already going to all the homes. We need to go in a safe way. Thank you very much for this hearing.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bond. Our next panelist is Reverend Thorbs.
Starting time.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you, Chair Gutierrez. I am Reverend Carlene Thorbs. I am the chairperson of Community Board 12 here in Jamaica, Queens. This covers St. Albans that I've heard of another pastor speak of, Hollis, Springfield, parts of Springfield, South Jamaica, and the Jamaica Avenue area. We are in COVID, and as we're coming, as we're slowly emerging back out into our communities, what do we see? The towers. This conversation about the kiosk began in 2018 here in Jamaica with the group called Greater Jamaica. The whole purpose of the kiosk was supposed to be on Jamaica Avenue to help bring Wi-Fi to the community, especially in that commercial strip area. Everyone was for it. Everyone was excited. And we also wanted our Wi-Fi in our parks. Instead, what we have gotten is kiosks being littered everywhere. And on top of that, now we have these monstrous towers that literally people are thrown off. They're fearful, and we can't blame them. This is not what we asked for. When Community Board 12 was contacted in regards to what type of unit we wanted to see, I clearly told them in writing, we did not want that. We did not want that 9 foot, 32 foot, 9 foot tower. We did not want that in our community. Now we have it. We're beginning to see it, and they do it in a very sneaky manner. They, you can drive through one section and not see it, and next come through again in a couple of days, and there's a tower put up. Currently on Rockaway Boulevard, there are two that are a block away from each other. And the way we've been told by Link NYC, they're looking to make a web type of connection. And with that being said, that means there needs to be one on every other block at least, with a 9-foot tower. That is not acceptable. I've seen these towers time expired. On our commercial mixed use, and they are right near windows. Our community, they came to us with a doctor who was talking about the medical effects and how there was no effects to the community. And it turns out he wasn't even a real doctor of biology. He was a fraud. As the prior gentleman said, I too am retired from law enforcement. Listening to how they came to us and the lies that they have told to our community board time and time again, we feel that they cannot be trusted. They're not coming with honesty. They're not coming with a straight story. They told our community we needed this 5G because we're so poor. We're homeowners here with renters. So how poor can we possibly be? Yes, we do have shelters, and we're carrying the weight of the shelters for the city, and the shelters need that 5G, and they need the children in the shelters need that equipment. But we do not need this 5G the way they're saying. And finally, I have already seen and heard on TV just yesterday that they are coming out with 10G. So now where does that leave 5G if 10G is already on the horizon? Put the wiring underground. There's a better way to do this. We too, Community Board 12, we want a moratorium. We have sent out our resolution. We want a cease and assist. We don't accept this. Well, to us, they told us we were broke. To Community Board 8, they said it was for the tourists. You can't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways. This is inequitable. Thank you for hearing me out.
Thank you very much, and thank you everyone for your excellent testimonies today. We're moving to our next panelists, and our next panelists are Michelle Brothbaum, followed by Megan Fitzpatrick, followed by Julie Ashcroft.
Starting time.
Hello, Chair Gutierrez and members of the committee. Thank you very much for hearing my testimony in opposition to the installation of 5G network towers in the New York City historic districts and in front of individual landmarks. My name is Michelle Birnbaum. As a founder and president from its inception of Historic Park Avenue, a preservation organization formed for the state purpose of including Park Avenue from 79th to 86th Street in a historic district, as were the streets on Park Avenue south of this location. After 9 years of very hard work, extensive community outreach, and diligence, we filed the RFE with the Landmarks Preservation Commission, and the district was designated in 2014, along with its inclusion on the state and national registers of historic places. Preservation organizations and the appropriate committees of community boards spend endless hours scrutinizing even the most minute details of buildings and streets that come before them in order to determine the best and most appropriate course of action needed to preserve and respect the integrity of those entities. As a member of Community Board 8 Manhattan and its Landmarks Committee, I take part in this effort regularly, and as a member of the Zoning Committee, I am vigilant in my efforts to protect our neighborhoods and make decisions appropriate to maintaining the livability of our community. The installation of 32-foot-tall 5G network towers and 5G multiple modules placed on lampposts are the antithesis of respecting the aesthetic standards of our historic districts and violate not only the city standard for historic districts, but the federal standards as well. The size of the towers, some of which include active advertising screens, overwhelm the streetscape, mask the view of trees, and interfere with the uniformity and standard of the architecture in a historic district. Sitting close to the windows of residents, the towers block views and emit questionable levels of wireless radiation, a concern that requires much more discussion.
Time expired.
Currently, let me sum up then just to say that the tech companies are available right now to build and operate an innovative and interconnected broadcast platform that use current infrastructure and actually send signals off the Empire State Building. This is in effect now, using current infrastructure with the communication companies such as Verizon and AT just have to tweak their system a bit as receivers. So the technology already exists for that. There's no reason for us to have these invasive towers. Please put a stop to this ill-thought-out, potentially dangerous and unnecessary program that takes advantage of the city coffers to line its own while providing no benefit to anyone. And thank you so much to the chair for really putting in the hard work today. I really appreciate, as I'm sure do others. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Our next panelist is Megan Fitzpatrick.
Starting time.
Hello, council members. Thank you for your time. My name is Megan Fitzpatrick, and I'm speaking on behalf of Landmark West. Landmark West shares concern with Upper West Side neighbors, the wider community, and advocacy groups that the design and installation of these proposed 5G towers will have an adverse impact on our historic districts and streetscapes. Wi-Fi towers have widened and more than doubled in height in just a few short years. The proposed design is wholly inappropriate, not only for its size, but for its disproportionate and frankly poor design. These towers are entirely out of scale for residential areas and most commercial areas in historic districts, where streets are often narrow and buildings are lower in scale. They can only serve to clutter the streets and city streets and historic districts. The lack of clarity regarding the approval and review process of 5G towers has led to a lack of trust from the community. The ostensibly random clusters of approved sites for installation with no official review process undertaken for towers installed in historic districts demonstrates a lack of transparency surrounding this important issue. We believe that no concern has been given to the sensitivity of placing these huge towers in historic districts or near individual landmarks and scenic landmarks simply for City Bridge's own goal of coverage and profit. Landmark West recommends a redesign of visible 5G infrastructure that applies sensitivity to the city's streetscapes. Alternative designs are possible without compromising the integrity of our city's historic neighborhoods. We seek clarification on the process of identifying and improving locations, especially in historic districts and near individual landmarks and scenic landmarks. We want a clear and transparent review process that effectively includes public opinion, including how the public will be informed of proposed sites and how forums for discussion and feedback will be organized. We also seek a list of installations to date with
time
specific locations. An up-to-date map showing installations to date and proposed locations. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our next panelist is Julie Ashcroft.
Starting time.
Okay, hello. This is a Juliet Ashcroft. As a low-income resident in City Council District 2, I do not need Link NYC Wi-Fi. I already received free internet from the FCC via the Affordability Connectivity Program. ACP gives me the opportunity to choose a Wi-Fi or a wired Ethernet connection. I choose Ethernet because Wi-Fi interferes with clear thinking, Wi-Fi interferes with sleep, and Wi-Fi interferes with other important body processes, including how the body uses calcium. I do not own a cell phone. I do not use Wi-Fi, and I wisely opted out of a dangerous smart meter before I installed metal screens over windows and mirrors and sheet metal over walls in my top floor apartment. I could feel microwave radiation from nearby wireless antennas cooking my body. Incoming radio frequencies also interfered with electronic equipment, such as my handheld decibel sound level meter. Although I still need to put sheet metal on the floors to block my neighbor's incoming electrosmog, the shielding I have already installed is improving my health and enabling my houseplants to grow into trees. My indoor forest not only removes carcinogenic air pollutants, it converts the CO2 that I exhale into pure clean oxygen. Link NYC Wi-Fi towers pose a fire threat to outdoor trees and to all nearby tenants living in combustible wood frame buildings, such as the pre-war rent stabilized building I live in. Link NYC tower fires have the potential to suddenly destroy low income and affordable housing at a time when we need it the most. Okay, I'm gonna read part of this. This is Wi-Fi is an important threat to human health. Wi-Fi causes oxidative stress, sperm testicular damage, neuropsychiatric effects, including EEG changes.
Time expired.
cellular DNA damage, endocrine changes, and calcium overload. That's an article from PubMed.
Thank you so much, everyone, for your testimony. We're moving to our next panel, and our next panel will be Erica Irwin, followed by Jill McManus, followed by Richard Frank, followed by Theodora Scarrato.
Starting time.
My name is Erica Ewing, and I am CEO and founder of Gotta Stop LLC. I'm a 24-year resident of Harlem. I'm on the Board of Trustees of Mount Morris Park Community and Improvement Association, and I'm former Chief of Staff of Black Lives Matter of Greater New York, and a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. The towers that have been proposed in the Marcus Garvey Landmark District, I want you to know, one, we already have Wi-Fi services that is provided all along our park, through the New York City Department of Parks and Recreation. Selling our Harlem streets to wireless telecommunications companies for their own profit is not something Harlem asked for, wants, or needs, nor was our historic district listed in the current Third Amendment of the Franchise Agreement. There is no singular definition to define the digital divide. The Link 5G cell towers franchise agreement with City Bridge solely concentrates on one aspect of the digital divide, which is availability, and blatantly ignores the other aspects, such as affordability, quality of service, relevance, and safety. Mount Morris Park residents, business owners, churches, daycare, schools, homeowners, community-based organizations, associations, including the New York City Parks and Recreation Department and the Harlem Historic Park Administration, living within the proposed area of the three Link 5G towers, were not consulted or given a needs assessment survey. So, again, Harlem did not ask for it. We don't want it, and we don't need it. Thank you.
Thank you. Jill McManus.
Starting time.
Thank you so much for having this very important hearing. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, thank you. I am a lifetime New Yorker, live in the community board eight area, which has rejected the towers. These Link 5G towers are like alien biological intruders, collecting a financial toll and a toll on our health. The planned build out of 4,000 5G cell towers and up to 7,500 by 2026 will bring millions of New York residents, whether elderly, pregnant women, children, people with physical disabilities or immune system problems, pets, and trees and other life forms, into involuntary daily close contact with invisible electrical charges from towers emitting unmeasured amounts of RF radiation 24/7. This wireless build-out has been touted to help close the digital divide. However, the build-out will have the opposite results. Many installations have been centered on so-called equity areas, which are identified by the telecoms, I guess, claiming they did a survey back in 2020 on the need for better wireless service, but they have no locatable documentation for that survey. It's all been very deceptive. Some people in those equity areas resent being considered needy and say they do not want the towers and do not need them. In fact, in those areas may not be able to afford 5G phones and services. The reality is they will be stuck with an inferior, if not already outdated, technology in an intrusive 32-foot-high data collecting form with little they can do about it and facing their windows. Wireless needs constant
upgrading. Time expired.
It's easily hackable and will expose them to radiation. Fiber optic wired broadband, on the other hand, is superior in every way and has been called future-proof. Also help children do their homework at home.
Thank you.
I demand that the committee urge a moratorium on any further installations of the Link 5G cell towers in New York City and to deactivate any of those already installed towers until more is known about the health effects public safety. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Our next panelist is Richard Frank.
Starting time.
Hello, my name is Richard Frank. I'm a broadband consultant. I've been designing and building fiber optic networks for over 40 years. I was asked by Odette Wilkins of wiredbroadband.org to chime in. I have designed and built networks in multiple states utilizing public and private funds, underserved areas of community, most notably a $40 million network connecting rural schools in impoverished Mississippi under a President Obama VTOC grant. I have twice been invited to speak on national syndicated radio, Gigabit Nation, as a broadband subject matter expert. I personally managed a fiber restoration for MCI WorldCom, returning telco services to Manhattan post 9/11, connecting Fed, city, and vital locations, bringing them back online. Remember the stock market bell rang a week later? I was behind that. I spent months at ground zero. I'm currently engaged a large engineering firm building fiber network to underserved areas of New York State via USDA grant. The USDA would not approve this project for funding as they would consider it unsustainable. As part of my career, I worked for Lexit and was their project manager on the Metro PCS fiber optic network build that also installed the fiber City Bridge utilizes. Big Tel and Cable created the digital divide by failing to upgrade wired facilities and instead invested in unproven, unsustainable wireless service offerings that are more profitable. These unsightly towers provide very limited penetration to bring broadband into residents. How did New York City get it so wrong? The continuation of this wireless deployment is outrageous given the digital divide is so wide and the gap can be closed via a wired solution. The money should instead be spent on fiber to underserved areas, particularly those that could access the ACP program that would make the project eligible for federal funding as well. I am often hired by organizations like OTI to help them make decisions such as this when they
time expired.
Wireless versus wired solutions. And I have posed three questions in writing that can be considered. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Frank. Our next panelist is Theodore Scaretto.
Starting time.
Unmute. Okay.
You're thanks. Unmuted.
Okay. I'm Theodore Scaretto, Executive Director of Environmental Health Trust. We are a scientific think tank. I just want to start in response to some of the testimony. 5G is a corporate land grab. It's pitched as bridging the digital divide. FCC limits are outdated, set in 1996, and these limits are based on small animal studies from the 70s and 80s, like this, when cell phones looked like this, brick phones. So we sued the FCC regarding its refusal to update its limits and the lack of review for over 10,000 pages of research and evidence. And by the way, the majority of studies show adverse effects. You can run it a lot of ways. Glad to explain in the question time more on that. In 2021, we won our lawsuit against the FCC. The U.S. Court of Appeals, D.C. Circuit, ordered the FCC to address what it had ignored, specifically the published research indicating impacts to the brain, to memory, inflammation, the endocrine system, children's vulnerability. Children absorb this radiation deeper into their more sensitive brains. The health effects of long-term exposure, because these limits are designed for short-term heating effects, but not long-term daily exposure for years. And environmental impacts. The FCC ignored studies showing damage to birds, bees, and tree canopy. Now, it's been nearly 2 years, and the FCC has not responded to the court mandate. The U.S. government can't explain how its antiquated 1996 limits protect human health or the environment. Why? Because there's no one watching the store. The EPA, CDC, FDA, National Cancer Institute, and World Health Organization have not scientifically reviewed the totality of the up-to-date research, and certainly not on 5G, 4G, or bioeffects related to long-term cell tower-level radiation. There's no risk assessment and no report by these agencies. And the last thing I'll say is that that is because there's no federal agency with any funded activities regarding cell tower radiation, no federal measurement or oversight program. It's a regulatory gap. And we sent numerous letters to the OTI. They have not answered that related to where are the ORF reports, the RF reports for what the radiation emits, and, you know, are those levels even compliant with the antiquated levels that we have, limits that we have. So there's still been no response to our letter, which I sent in the testimony. I submitted extensive written testimony to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Theodora, right? That's your name? Yes. Sorry. Thank you so much for your testimony. Can you expand a little bit on what the mandate determined in 2021 and how the FCC is not in compliance if they're not meeting this mandate?
Well, the FCC decided in 2019, so a few years ago, that the 1996 limits, the ones set decades ago based on science developed earlier, that those did not need to be updated. Now, there had been a almost 7-year inquiry where the FCC was accepting science, testimony, recommendations. It had asked the questions, should we update these limits? Should we update based on children's vulnerability? They actually asked all the right questions in their inquiry. And they have a record with over 10,000, actually more than that, pages of science and evidence. Then in 2019, they said, oh, we looked at it and we decided that there's no reason to change the limits, to update them. And so that is actually when they triggered and greenlighted the 5G streamlining, the fast track rules at the federal level. So our lawsuit was that the FCC literally ignored, did not address, did not even mention all of the issues that I talked about, the non-cancer issues, impacts to memory, brain damage. Someone who testified earlier talked about Dr. Hugh Taylor's research that found damage to mammary in animals. He's the chief of OBGYN at Yale and also on our board. And that was completely ignored, all of that science, as well as everything related to birds, bees, and trees. So by law, an agency has to show that they properly reviewed everything that was presented to it. They should have said, we looked at what you said about children's vulnerability and we think X, Y, and Z. The key piece of this, though, is that the FCC can't opine on the issue of health because it's not a health and science agency. They don't have medical doctors or scientists who have, are trained in understanding it. So they needed to rely on other agencies. So one of the key issues in the court case was that one of the judges in the oral arguments was saying, well, how do you know this is safe for a long term? And the FCC attorney, this is just an example of what happened in the case, said, well, we just know. And the judge, and not in so many words, said, you can't just know by whose authority. There is no agency. The EPA used to measure the levels in the environment. No longer does that. There's no monitoring. There's no oversight. There's no looking at the science on a cell tower, and 5G, of course, is completely, there's been no review of that. So the lawsuit was about proper review of the record. Mm-hmm. And the FCC was ordered to respond in 2021, and they have not responded.
And then can you also, thank you, by the way, you mentioned that you had shared correspondence with OTI. Can you just, how many times and the dates? Because it's my understanding that they have not responded.
Right. In fact, it was sent to, okay, so I had have to pull it up.
Yeah, when you can, you can submit it.
It's about three or four, maybe five times I sent them this letter. And finally, I sent it to a council person who sent it. And then I got an email back that it was now a FOIL, you call it a FOIL, uh-huh, a public information request, and I have not gotten a response. And my question was, where are the RF radiation measurement reports? And at OTI said in a meeting way back, one of the community board meetings, they said, oh, well, we don't have any antennas in there, so we don't have that information. But you see, The way it normally works is when there is an application for a facility, there is a computer simulations that can be done to estimate what the levels will be based on what's in the environment, based on the projected antenna strength and frequency and so forth. In my community, for example, and I'm in Maryland, actually, our city actually hired a firm to do that, to simulate if there was a cell installation, what would the levels be? How far would it go out? And they did a worst case, best case. They did like one antenna, three antennas, but none of that has been done. And also, OTI said that they have radiation measurements that are being done or have been done on other facilities. I've asked for those. I have not received those. So I don't know where they are or if, like, I don't know where they are. Now, one of the problems is there's no oversight on this. Like, who's checking? Who's checking that those reports exist, that there is compliance, that those compliance reports are looking at what are the levels inside the building? Mm-hmm. Not just standing on the ground, but inside the building when you're just 8 feet from these antennas. So
right.
I have not received a response.
Wonderful. Thank you. If you have the capacity to forward that to the same email that you used to testify, that would be great.
Great. I have it in my testimony.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you again for your testimony, and we are calling our final panel, and our final panelists are Zach Weinstein, Yesenia Martam, Cecilia Doucette, Anna Markham, and Dina Tess Winter.
Starting time.
Mr. Weinstein?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was unable to unmute myself for a while there. If you could restart the clock, I'd appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah, my name is Zach Weinstein. I'm with Save Gansevoort. We're a group that deals with landmarking, zoning, and quality of life issues in the western portion of Community Ward 2 Manhattan. I'd like to talk about problems with the siting process for these 5G towers, and I'll give some examples from our community. OTI and CityBridge have emphasized the detailed guidelines and multiple layers of review that govern the siting process. But reviews are meaningless if project planners never analyze the results and respond to complaints and suggestions in a meaningful way. Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine wrote a letter expressing multiple concerns. As far as I know, and I checked with his office many times, he received no response. All of our local elected officials sent a joint letter asking for a moratorium. Detailed reasons. No response from OTI. Community Board 2, as you heard from Will Benish, passed a detailed 3-page resolution requesting a moratorium in our community. There has been no response from OTI. But it wasn't just that there was no response to that resolution. Something worse happened. Despite OTI telling Community Board 2 that it was still reviewing comments and that there was still time for CB2 to weigh in and to have their resolution considered, a mere 10 days later, CityBridge started pouring foundations for two of these towers on Washington Street. The decision must have been made before the CB2 hearing, given the lead times necessary to survey the site and to schedule construction. Second, OTI and CityBridge have been completely unable to follow their own guidelines. In our area, there's a tower adjacent to an individual landmark that violates OTI's guidelines. There are two towers on one block that violates OTI's own guidelines. There are towers with advertising screens located within historic districts that violates OTI's own guidelines. There are towers too close to trees.
Time expired.
Well, just finished. Towers that leave less than eight feet of sidewalk for pedestrians, towers blocking stop signs, all violate the guidelines. And this isn't just a matter of violating the letter of the law, violating the letter of the rules. The big question here is, if OTI and CityBridge have made such a mess of the siting process, how can we trust that they will be able to avoid going bankrupt, successfully bridge the digital divide, and guarantee that the 5G towers are being operated in compliance with all safety standards, inadequate as those standards may be? Thank you very much. Appreciate your time and greatly respect your tolerance, patience, and stamina for running this hearing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Weinstein. And our next panelist is Yesenia Mata.
Starting time.
Thank you to the chair of the committee, Councilmember Gutierrez, for holding this important hearing. My name is Yesenia Mata. I am the executive director of La Colmena, an immigrant and worker rights organization based in Staten Island. I wanted to take this opportunity to discuss the partnership between La Colmena and Link NYC. Together, we created the Gigabyte Center in Staten Island to bring Wi-Fi to the immigrant community. La Colmena currently is a satellite for the city of New York to provide support and services to new arrivals around workforce development. The type of support that La Colmena has provided to new arrivals is around legal orientations, construction classes, pre-apprenticeship programs, ESL, and digital classes. As a Gigabyte Center, we have been able to reach many new arrivals. You see, the way that many of them communicate is through WhatsApp. Also, the way they are able to stay in tune on the services they are available to them, and even further to do their check-ins with ICE or with court. Through the Gigabyte Center, many new arrivals go to La Colmena, a place where they feel safe and have the opportunity to use the free Wi-Fi. With all of those many services that we have and the amount of people that we see, the free Wi-Fi received through Link NYC has become very useful. We all know that Wi-Fi opportunities is very low in income, in low-income BIPOC communities. And the Gigabyte Center at La Colmena is currently providing those type of opportunities. Looking forward, we're definitely looking forward to being part of this conversation that will bring digital justice in BIPOC and American communities. Thank you for your time.
Yesenia, can I ask you a question? Yes, thank you for sticking around. For members of La Colmena, while they're in the space, the gigabit space, do they all have the devices to be able to connect to Wi-Fi and 5G? Is that an issue as well for your members?
So two things, right? I want to bring in, I want to talk about one instance. I remember one time La Colmena was distributing 50 desktops to the community, the Stapleton community and under resource community. And I remember we were distributing these desktops. And what ended up happening, once the people got to their homes, they were like, oh, yes, you know, we don't have Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
This is, and we didn't think that far, you know, we weren't really. That was the time when we started realizing that Wi-Fi is a luxury at this point, and that under-resourced communities don't have access to technology as other communities. So that's one instance. As for when Link NYC came to La Colmena and we created the first Gigabyte Center to support the immigrant community. What is happening at the moment is that many asylum seekers are coming to La Colmena and they already have cell phones. And they ask for services, but as well, while they're there, they're able to use like their cell phone, and then we teach them how, like, you know, they could do like their check-in or check for like their court. But because La Colmena is also the community immigrant center, many of them, like, once they get out of the shelter in the morning, they come to La Colmena or are around La Colmena using their cell phone. And every time they come up, they have a question, they come back in La Colmena, they say, hey, you know, I just checked this online. Is this a service you have available? Or is this true that I could go to here and they'll provide me this service? So it's very interesting how it became like the hub, the Wi-Fi hub. And what is happening right now is that we have it right now in the Stapleton area, but now like in our Port Richmond area, our day laborers in our community is also asking for a Gigabyte Center because it reaches a certain distance. So like we're always like at la parada where workers are at. So I guess that's majority of them already have like their cell phones to be able to access.
Thank you so much. It doesn't sound like or maybe we're not aware, but they're not having issues even carrying the devices. They have them and they're utilizing La Colmena as a one-stop shop for Wi-Fi and resources. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next panelist is Cecilia Doucette.
Starting time.
Well,
One moment, my video is just coming online. Good evening, my name is Cecilia Doucette and I'm the director of Massachusetts for Safe Technology. I helped my schools become the first in the nation to start taking precautionary measures with wireless technology. I also helped New Hampshire become the first state in the nation to pass a law to investigate the health and environmental impact of today's 5G and wireless technology. Their groundbreaking commission report documents conflicts of interest with the wireless industry, the FDA, the FCC, and other federal agencies. New Hampshire also documents documents biological harm from wireless technology and makes 15 recommendations to transition away from toxic wireless emissions and instead invest in fiber optics to and through the premises. Retired president of Microsoft Canada, Frank Clegg, testified that wireless is no longer advanced technology. Fiber optics directly to and through the premises is. Now, the Earth pulses healthy electron energy at 7.83 times per second. Wireless man-made technology pulses a million times in the megahertz range and a billion times in the gigahertz range at our cells. Quite simply, wireless radiation overpowers our biological cells. This radio frequency radiation detection meter lets us see this invisible energy. Here in my house, I'm at a nice safe level of green, but I want to give you a demonstration of what happens with wireless technology. When I take my cell phone out of airplane, see how we went into the flashing red? That's extremely hazardous according to the biological science. I'm going to go right back into airplane mode to remove that exposure. It went up to over a half a
time expired.
In the science, they want us at 10. So I do safe technology training twice a month. I invite you to join us at Massachusetts for Safe Technology for an educational webinar, and we can help you learn how to bring safe, hardwired technology to and through the premises. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Our next witness is Anna Markham.
Starting time.
Hello, my name is Anna Markham, and I am the executive director of Friends of the Upper East Side Historic District, and I am testifying on behalf of the organization today. Since the Link 5G program began its surprisingly unfettered and aggressive rollout last fall, we've expressed broad concerns about the proposed installation of 32-foot Link 5G towers throughout the Upper East Side and New York City. While we wholeheartedly believe that equitable and reliable access to high-speed internet is essential, there are a myriad of issues with the Link 5G project. One of the most puzzling is the opacity behind the siting of the towers. OTI and the City Bridge team have offered inconsistent reasoning, all equally vague, for the tower siting, oscillating between a strategic placement to bridge the digital divide and placing towers at the behest of various commercial telecommunication companies to fortify their networks. The absurdity of the siting plan is clearly illustrated in the proposed locations on the Upper East Side. Nine Link 5Gs are proposed in our neighborhoods, seven of which are in historic districts. Inexplicably, six are located in a 2x9 block area of Carnegie Hill. Each of these towers are less than 3 blocks away from the next closest tower. In another part of the neighborhood, there are 2 towers, 1 diagonal block from each other at the southwest corner of Madison Avenue and 62nd Street and southwest corner of Park Avenue and 63rd Street. While City Bridge and OTI claim today that the siting for the towers was more thoughtful and spaced out than the initial rollout, these towers are 3 times the height of the original kiosks and much more visually intrusive. Clustering these massive towers in our historic districts would irreparably alter the built environment and rhythm of our streetscape. Friends is also troubled by the design of the towers. OTI and City Bridge have failed to appropriately address 2 key contingencies of their Public Design Commission approval. The LPC's jurisdiction over the siting of the towers and the requirement to research and develop a design more
time expired
to residential areas and historic districts. Earlier this year, I asked OTI and City Bridge representatives about the requirement to research a more appropriate design, and it was not acknowledged as a written condition of the approval, and overall was disregarded. From a thoughtful redesign of the tower to cleverly blending the canisters housing the 5G connectivity equipment with the existing street architecture, there are surely more sensitive design solutions to this problem. The issues with the program extend well beyond what I've discussed today, including the rampant privatization of public space and the negative impact of these structures on ADA accessibility and congestion of our sidewalks. We strongly encourage more pause until they can outline clear processes for community engagement, approval, and transparency. Thank you. Apologies for going over.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Our next witness is Dana Tesswinter.
Starting time.
Chair Gutierrez and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Dina Tesswinter, and I'm speaking on behalf of Village Preservation. Founded in 1980, Village Preservation is a 501c3 organization that works to document, celebrate, and preserve the special architectural heritage and cultural history of Greenwich Village, the East Village, and NoHo. Village Preservation was deeply concerned when plans were first announced to install these huge, ungainly three-story towers on sidewalks across our neighborhoods, sometimes right next to residential windows and in or adjacent to landmarked areas with little to no public input. While towers located in historic districts will be subject to review by the Landmarks Preservation Commission, it is as of yet unclear how that process will work in this case. VP is grateful to have recently been granted consulting party status for the impending Section 106 review of these towers. However, many questions surrounding the city's process for the design, siting, and installation remain. VP strongly opposes the uniform installation of these towers throughout our neighborhoods. The location and context for each tower needs to be carefully considered, and in the initial proposal, the city had proposed to site concentrations of them in areas where they are not needed and would particularly negatively impact landmarked buildings and historic districts, like in the Far West Village and Meatpacking District. Village Preservation supports the deployment of 5G infrastructure for all New Yorkers to have access to wireless connectivity, but there are ways to strategically do so without obstructing the historic architectural fabric of the city. The 32-foot-tall towers would be an overpowering and ungainly presence within certain streetscapes where the majority of buildings are 3 to 4-story row houses or other low-scale structures. Surely, with a proper strategy in place, connectivity can be brought to these areas without the visual blight and widespread negative impacts on our historic streetscapes and landmarks. To conclude, we question the rationale for how the equity districts were initially determined and maintain that neighborhoods such as the East Village are not the most in need. Efforts could instead be focused on neighborhoods that are actually in digital deserts and would gain the greatest benefit from this technology. Doing so would better serve the program's goal while protecting historic viewsheds and the architectural features of our city. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And our final witness is Michael Martin.
Starting time.
Do we still have Michael on Zoom? Do you see him? No, I currently do not see our final witness on Zoom. And this will conclude our public testimony. One moment. Give me one moment. I think we have some technical difficulties right now. We're gonna call Michael in a moment. Okay. Looks like my colleagues experiencing some difficulties with Zoom right now. And this was our last panel. It will conclude our public testimony. And if you have registered to testify and haven't been called, please raise your Zoom hand on Zoom. Yes, actually, I apologize. Yes. I think our final witness just got connected to Zoom.
Yes, Chair.
You may begin.
I'm here. Thank you. Thank you so much for your patience. Good afternoon, counselors. My name is Michael Muadeen. I'm president of the Alliance for Microwave Radiation Accountability, a New York-based nonprofit organization working for those disabled by electromagnetic sensitivity, sickness recognized for 70 years as microwave radiation syndrome. 2019 study by Michael Bevington analyzed the prevalence of electromagnetic radiation disabilities in the population. Based on its percentages and the 8 million people living in New York City, 55,000 people are already so disabled they can't work. Another 127,000 people have severe symptoms. Some 423,000 people experience moderate symptoms. 30% of your constituents, some 2.5 million people, are already dealing with mild symptoms of electromagnetic illness. The worst victims are refugees from radiation, forced to withdraw from society, unable to tolerate additional exposure from any source. The injured lose their civil rights and access to medical care, the legal system, and government. They can't walk into City Hall, a courthouse, a library, a bank, or a hospital. They're no longer able to go shopping for food or clothing. Every store is off limits due to the radiation from Wi-Fi and cell phones. You can't overcome the digital divide through wireless technology that causes microwave radiation syndrome and disables even more people, barring them from civic life and public spaces. You need to declare a moratorium on all new construction of 5G monopoles and deactivate all 5G towers now in service before the people of New York City are devastated. Provide wired broadband through fiber to the premises. It's faster, safer, and uses less energy. Lastly, no law prevents this committee from holding hearings on the health impacts of 5G, a necessary first step toward granting the victims of microwave radiation syndrome formal recognition of our illness and disability, equal access to public spaces, and justice for our suffering. Thank you for your time and kind attention.
Thank you again. Thank you for your testimony. And this concludes our public testimony. And once again, if you have registered to testify virtually, but you haven't been called, please raise your Zoom hand. And I do not see anyone right now on Zoom. And I want to thank everyone for the testimony. And I want to turn to the chair for closing remarks and to adjourn the hearing.
Well, thank you, Irene, and thank you to my team, Anna and Anya, and certainly all of our panelists and witnesses, and Robert, thanks for sticking around, and the folks at City Bridge, thank you so much. Sergeant at Arms, I appreciate it. Please go home to your families. Be safe. This hearing is adjourned.